Alaska stands out among other states because the per-person rebate amounts are expected to be much higher than the national average.
Some health insurance companies in Alaska will be handing out hefty rebates. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, May 10th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, texting while driving becomes illegal in Alaska.
It's more dangerous than, any of the other sort of distracted things you can do short of drunk driving.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oilfield services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
Anchorage police have confirmed that a body found north of downtown Anchorage earlier this week was that of an airman missing for 3 weeks. Lieutenant Dave Parker says the body found was that of senior airman Clinton Reeves of Raytown, Missouri. Parker spoke during a Thursday morning news conference at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. Reeves failed to report for work at J-Bear on April 23rd. His rental car was found later with uniforms and groceries inside. Another airman, James Devin Thomas, was arrested Tuesday on charges of evidence tampering. Police call Thomas a person of interest in the case. Attorneys for the State Redistricting Board and for those opposed to the board's latest plan faced off in oral arguments today before the Alaska Supreme Court. Board Attorney Michael White argued for the board's petition to the court to allow the use of its earliest plan for this year's election. The March plan had been amended in regard to two Fairbanks area House districts.
The board's position on the amended proclamation plan is that it's concerned that preclearance could not be timely obtained in order to allow that plan to go into place. And therefore, that's why the board has requested that, pursuant to the dictates of this court, when it came to be that they determined that they could not get the amended proclamation plan done in time, it followed this court's dictates and submitted the amended proclamation plan fixing the two districts in Fairbanks as the interim plan.
An interim plan means the plan selected for the 2012 election. Justice Dana Fabe asked White why the board in its May petition has not asked the court to approve its April 5th plan.
Is it so clear that the board's proposed interim plan is going to sail through the preclearance process any more than the amended proclamation plan? That's my question.
White said the need for an interim plan for this year's election is time sensitive because of a Monday deadline. The Division of Elections needs to know what new precincts to put into place. But any plan that is used must be approved by the Federal Department of Justice and pass a one-person, one-vote rule. The only plan that has DOJ clearance at this time is the board's initial plan.
And the reason why the board proposed it is because the native districts in the interim plan have in fact been pre-cleared already. There's absolutely no difference between the proclamation plan and the interim plan as far as the native districts are concerned.
But opposing counsel argued that a plan from 2002 should be used as the interim plan, Fairbanks attorney Michael Wallery and Justice Winfrey.
So if you simply use the benchmark plan, it is the cleanest in terms of VRA. That is the most certain to not be a retrogressive plan.
By that, I assume when you refer to benchmark plan, you're referring to the 2002 redistricting.
Again, meaning the 2002 plan, because we know that it doesn't make a change that is retrogressive.
The justices said that a number of plans could be considered if all passed state constitutional muster, and in 2 hours of debate, a number of alternative plans were mentioned. The High Court has other options, including moving the June 1st filing deadline for candidates in this year's election. A Supreme Court decision could come tomorrow. The board has also asked the High Court to review a lower court decision in regard to its April 5th redistricting plan, which was rejected by a lower court judge. Alaskans in some health insurance plans will be getting the biggest rebates in the country, according to a new report from the Kaiser Family Foundation. The rebates are part of the Affordable Care Act, which requires insurers to refund money to consumers if they spend more than 20% of their premium income on administrative costs. In Alaska, the largest rebates will be more than $500. Cynthia Cox is a fellow at the Kaiser Family Foundation and one of the authors of the report. She told APRN's Lori Townsend two health plans in Alaska plan to issue rebates.
One of the insurers that's expecting to issue a rebate is expecting more than $300,000, and this is for people who purchase insurance on their own. Of these people, the average amount is expected to be about $300. The other Alaskan insurer that's expecting to issue rebates offers coverage to small businesses and their employees. That plan's rebates average out to about $500 per enrollee.
And how does this compare to the U.S. as a total?
Well, we found that these rebate amounts vary quite a bit from state to state. Alaska stands out among other states because the per-person rebate amounts are expected to be much higher than the national average. The national average is less than about $150 for individuals or $75 for small businesses, and Alaska's is more than double of that. However, the portion of Alaskans in plans that are expecting to issue rebates is relatively small. Less than 10% of Alaskans who get insurance on their own or through small businesses are in plans that expect to issue rebates. And no plans that offer coverage to large businesses in Alaska are expecting to issue rebates.
Overall in the U.S., how many people will be getting rebates?
Well, total, the amount of rebates in the U.S. is expected to be about $1.3 billion. This is going to go to individuals and employers. As in the case of employer-sponsored coverage, the premium cost is often split between employers and employees. So it's hard to say exactly how many people will be getting rebates, but for people who purchase insurance on their own, about 30% or one in three people can expect to get a rebate nationwide.
And is the amount that you cited more than you expected?
It was hard to know exactly what to expect since this is the first year that the medical loss ratio has been in effect. However, we were surprised by the portion of people who are affected. As I said, one in three people who purchase insurance on their own can be expecting a rebate this year, and that's a pretty sizable portion of the market.
How important do you think this part of the law, the Affordable Care Act, is?
Well, this particular piece of the healthcare reform law most likely won't be the magic bullet that controls healthcare spending. The intent of this piece of the healthcare reform law is not to control healthcare spending necessarily. The intent of it is to make sure that people get the most value for their premium dollar. So there are other pieces of the healthcare reform law that may do more to control costs or to lower premiums.
Cynthia Cox of the Kaiser Family Foundation spoke with APRN's Lori Townsend. The foundation's report doesn't reveal which health insurance companies in Alaska will be issuing rebates. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, extensive ice covers hampers another Alaska fishery.
We saw some smelt in Togiak Bay, but not a lot really of seabird activity relative to what we'd see if there were herring there.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. And by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The Coast Guard reports it is responding to an ammonia leak on a fishing vessel 80 miles north of Cold Bay in the Bering Sea. Responders were expected to arrive on scene at 5 p.m. this evening. The report came in around 1 p.m. this afternoon that crew members were suffering from ammonia exposure. The extent of injuries is unknown. Governor Sean Parnell today put the final touches on a law that legislators thought they had handled 4 years ago. With his signature, it is now illegal to send or read a text message while driving. Lawmakers thought they had included a ban on texting in a bill that passed in 2008. But last year, several judges around the state disagreed, ruling in individual cases that the law did not cover sending messages over smartphones. Instead of starting what lawyers advised would be a three-year process to appeal those decisions, legislators decided to pass a more specific law. Haines Republican Bill Thomas was one of six sponsors of the bill.
It was a public safety issue all along. And you travel about 6 seconds while you're texting, which is the length of a football field. And you can either drive off the road, hit another vehicle, or do something else. So the idea is to concentrate on your driving and not texting.
Anchorage Democrat Les Guerra was another sponsor. Guerra says a person who is texting while driving becomes a weapon.
It's more dangerous than, any of the other sort of distracted things you can do short of drunk driving. And actually, while you're typing a text, there's one study that says it's actually more dangerous than drunk driving. Your action time is slower. So we wanted to make sure that people knew that it was illegal, that it's not okay. Even though people feel like it's a social thing, it's very, very dangerous. I mean, you can kill somebody doing this.
The bill goes into effect at midnight tonight, and violators risk being charged with a misdemeanor. The Alaska Village Electric Cooperative services 54 villages throughout interior and western Alaska. Given the right opportunity, the company wants to add a 55th community, Bethel. But right now, that is a big if, as in if the community's current utility provider would be willing to sell. KYUK's Mark Earhart has more.
Publicly, the status of the Bethel Utilities Corporation is a bit of a mystery. For years, it has been said that BUC would be bought out by TDX Power, a private utility company like BUC. So far, that deal has not gone through, though, even though many believe that it could still be in the works. That hasn't stopped the Bethel City Council from expressing its interest in bringing a different kind of power company to the city, specifically an electric cooperative to buy out BUC.
The city of Bethel has not been in favor of BUC being taken over by another investor-owned utility, and very much would like to see the utility operated as a public nonprofit utility.
That's Mira Kohler, president and CEO of the Alaska Village Electric Cooperative. Her company is the preferred suitor of the Bethel City Council. She says that, to her knowledge, TDX and BUC are still in negotiations, but makes sure to point out that if those talks fall through, her company would be waiting in the wings.
We would be very interested in taking over Bethel Utilities.
Such an outcome would surely please the council, and according to a feasibility study commissioned by the council, it could save residents money in the long run.
We think that we could be a very, very good alternative for the utility. We have 54 villages now, and Bethel would be, of course, the largest of those.
Kohler says the purchase of BUC could be a cornerstone for AVEC, which operates power plants in several villages surrounding Bethel.
But it would allow us to establish a hub in Bethel using the BUC facilities and be able to provide very, very good service both to Bethel and to 20-odd villages in the YK area that we currently serve.
So what do BUC or TDX say to all this wishful thinking? Well, we don't exactly know. Repeated requests for interviews were not returned. For now, the public is in the dark about the status of BUC. Whether the company will be bought out by TDX or another company remains to be seen, but the city of Bethel and AVEC will surely be paying attention. In Bethel, I'm Mark Earhart.
A group called Friends of Auk Bay is fighting a state road project to build a roundabout in the small commercial district north of Juneau. Group members say the project would make the area less livable and destroy DeHart's, a popular roadside convenience store and gas station in the heart of Auk Bay. KTOO's Casey Kelly reports.
Friends of Auk Bay organizer Carla Hart this week presented about 500 signatures to the Juneau Planning Commission, urging the city and state to reconsider the planned roundabout in front of DeHart's. The small grocery store and gas station sits at the intersection of Glacier Highway and Mendenhall Loop Road, overlooking Auk Bay. Built in the 1940s, it predates most modern development in the area. Hart thinks other businesses in the Auk Bay Commercial District could be threatened by the project.
Auk Bay is still an incredible neighborhood. It has a lot of locally owned businesses, small businesses that are owner-operated, and we risk losing that.
Friends of Auk Bay jumped the gun a bit by going to the Juneau Planning Commission this week. While commissioners listened to the group's presentation, the state won't seek local permits until later this year at the earliest. However, the state's public comment period on final design drawings is open through this Saturday, and DOT spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says the petition will be taken into consideration.
Definitely. That's why we have a public comment period, is so you can take these type of items into consideration before the final plan is put forth.
Woodrow says the state prefers to buy DeHart's and build a roundabout that would require demolition of the store, but that's not the only option. DOT could build a smaller traffic circle that would allow the store to remain in place. The main difference between the two proposals is the number of entry and exit points. The larger version includes a fork into and out of the Stater Harbor parking lot. But Woodrow says safety is the major reason DOT prefers the larger roundabout. He says the department's data shows 17 vehicle accidents at the Glacier Highway Loop Road intersection between 2005 and 2009, nearly twice the average for the amount of traffic.
The larger roundabout will improve vehicle traffic, and actually it improves pedestrian safety as well because it allows the roundabout to be more leveled out. It allows better viewing throughout the area. It's not saying that the smaller one won't work. However, you know, if we can get the preferred option in there, the DOT would like to explore that route first.
The smaller roundabout proposal calls for a 12-foot retaining wall adjacent to DeHart's. The wall would remove one of two driveways at the front of the store, as well as a delivery driveway at the rear. DeHart's co-owner and manager Dan Hickok says it would effectively put the store out of business.
They're limiting our access to the store. It would not be a convenience store.
Woodrow says state engineers don't believe the smaller design would limit access to the store. Hickok says the state has yet to make him an offer for the property. Even if it did, he's not sure he's willing to sell.
We've only been running the store for 4.5 years, and we didn't get in this business so we could just sell it out to the state. We're here for the long run. You know, we got family here and kids go to school here, and to actually put a price on something like that is kind of a difficult situation.
DOT's Woodrow says a decision won't be made on the roundabout until this fall at the earliest. The traffic circle is part of a larger project to make safety improvements to Glacier Highway from Fritz Cove Road to Seaview Avenue. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at Primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory. And by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
A three-pawed grizzly bear missing its right front paw is making appearances at Denali National Park and Preserve. Fairbanks Daily Newsminer reports the grizzly was first spotted last summer. He's been seen regularly near the park entrance for the last 3 weeks. Park wildlife biologist Pat Owen says the bear keeps the stump off the ground as he runs, and the wound appears to have healed. No one knows how the bear lost its paw. Owen says people speculate that the bear got its paw caught in a snare meant for a wolf. The Copper River salmon fishing season is set to get underway next week. The first commercial opening at the river's mouth is scheduled for May 17th. Glen Allen area management biologist Mark Somerville says the run is forecast to be relatively strong.
A little bit better than last year for kings. We're looking at a projection of about 54,000 king salmon into the Copper River in 2012. Expected number of sockeye coming in is about 2.15 million total, and about 330,000 of those are going to be hatchery fish.
Somerville says the forecast sockeye return is a bit above average. Dip netters will have to wait a little longer to get their first crack at the fish at Chitna. The dip net fishery used to start between June 1st and the 11th, but Somerville says the Board of Fish pushed it back to between the 7th and the 15th.
There was testimony at the Board of Fisheries that subsistence fisheries further upriver were not getting the fish that they needed to, and that the upper early portion of the returns that go up into, say, the far upper portions of the Copper River weren't coming back in historic numbers. So the board looked at the timing and delayed the Chitna fishery.
Somerville says the commercial harvest was also tweaked by eliminating one of two early season openings inside the barrier islands at the Copper River Delta. The largest herring fishery in Alaska is on hold in Bristol Bay as fishermen and processors wait for the herring to show up. KDLG's Mike Mason has this update.
A handful of fishermen and four processors are waiting for the conditions to get right for the massive Togiak herring biomass to show up. The cold winter, snowpack, and sea ice are all thought to be contributing factors to the late start this year. The very first observation flight was flown Wednesday by staff with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. That's the latest start to observation flights in history, according to ADF&G area management biologist Tim Sands in Dillingham. He didn't observe any signs of herring.
We saw some smelt in Togiak Bay, and we saw a few seabirds, no marine mammals, and not a lot really of seabird activity relative to what we'd see if there were herring there. So it's just a little bit early yet.
Sand says ADF&G staff will fly another survey flight Monday, weather permitting. There has been record sea ice coverage in the Bering Sea that has already impacted one fishery. Fish and Game issued an emergency order Tuesday, noting that sea ice has significantly reduced the available fishing grounds for the ongoing Bering Sea snow crab fishery, which has resulted in nearly 25% of the available snow crab not yet harvested. To give fishermen some more time, Fish and Game has extended fishing time in an area of the Bering Sea through the end of the month. Sand says the relationship between Bering Sea ice and the arrival time for herring in the Togiak District is unknown.
We know that the water temperature is the key for the herring. So I guess my gut feeling says that if temperature around Togiak is warm enough for herring to spawn, then the herring will show up and spawn, regardless of what the ice is doing further out offshore.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is currently registering processing companies wanting to buy herring, and Sand says so far only four companies have signed up. That's down from the six companies that bought herring last year. Most fishermen anticipate the price of Togiak herring will be down this year. Last year, fishermen received about $100 a ton, but several fishermen have told KDLG News that they're expecting the price to come in at around $80 a ton this year. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
The first cruise ships of the 2012 season have begun sailing through southeast Alaska. More ships will make port calls this year than last, and some of their passengers will reflect new industry trends. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld takes a look at the season from Juneau's waterfront.
4 buses line up as the first passengers of the year walk down the Carnival Spirits ramp to one of Juneau's cruise ship docks. Excursion greeters hold up signs to attract confused customers who they send on down the line to their tours.
Fraser Wallace?
Hello.
Welcome.
The Spirit can hold more than 3,500 passengers and crew. Those not already booked on a tour walk on by gift shops to a row of kiosks. There, salesman Khalid Habash of Last Chance Tours is surrounded by signs for trips and experiences.
We offer a variety of shore excursions, for example, whale watching, helicopter tours, seaplane tours, zip lining, fishing, canoeing, kayaking, salmon bakes. Pretty much anything that you can do in Juneau.
The capital city will see passenger numbers climb to almost 1 million this season. Lorraine Palmer of Juneau's Convention and Visitors Bureau says that's encouraging.
Well, 2012 is looking better than last year. With the addition of one of Princess's ships, we've added about 48,000 additional passengers. So that's a pretty big jump over last year.
In fact, it's coming close to the record number of a few years ago when more than 1 million people sailed these waters. Palmer says some of this year's passengers are part of a growing trend of extended family travel.
So Alaska is a very popular place to come to celebrate a milestone event, whether it's an anniversary, family reunion, 50th birthday. Any of those things tend to be a real motivator to bring the family and friends to Alaska. So we're seeing quite a bit of that.
She says cruise ships are also bringing younger passengers, many looking for hands-on experiences such as kayaking or hiking.
We've just added a paddle boarding experience here in Juneau. So we're starting to see more and more adventure-based travel.
And that's a trend that's been going on for a couple years, isn't it?
It is. Our baby boomer generation is remaining and pursuing active lifestyles. And so you're seeing that translated into the shore excursions and the tour operations offered here in Juneau.
Cruise lines like to fill their ships, so they'll deeply discount tickets if demand is low. Ron Peck of the Alaska Travel Industry Association says that's not so much the case this year. But he does note some passengers' timing is changing.
In some cases, they're much more cost conscious, and so they're looking for those deals. In other cases, they're just doing a lot more research on their own. And so in some cases, they are delaying their bookings, but we still get a pretty good feel early on.
Back at the dock, Khalid Habash watches as the first wave of passengers heads towards his kiosk. He laughs as he wonders what questions they'll have.
A lot of people ask me what the sea level is, which is pretty funny. A lot of people ask me if you can see whales from the helicopter trip, which is pretty interesting question. Those are probably my favorite. A lot of people ask me if the bald eagles in these trees are real or not.
This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau's downtown waterfront.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org or follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Mark Earhart in Bethel, Casey Kelly in Juneau, Dan Vross in Fairbanks, Mike Mason in Dillingham, and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net. Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them, and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted, so make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.